Welcome to the Curious Women Podcast. I'm your host, Meg Hager, and I'm here with my co-host, Kylie Fagnano, and we're chatting about women's health to teach you what you didn't know you didn't know. Hello, all you curious women. We are so glad that you love our podcast. I just wanted to pop in and say really fast, apologies in advance. This episode has some audio issues that we just couldn't fix. So bear with us. We are working on the issues for our future episodes and apologies. Hi, everybody. We are back with another episode of Curious Women, where we have chats about women's health to teach you what you didn't know you didn't know. And today I am so thrilled to have one of my good friends, Dr. Sarah Chong, to sit down and chat with us. She's going to be talking with us today about a really cool topic that I think is super unique and maybe something you haven't heard or thought of before. So Dr. Sarah is a Korean-American functional medicine practitioner specializing in gut health. She's passionate about helping other women of culture naturally address their gut disorders by incorporating traditional medicine and practices into their modern lives. So without further ado, let's jump into it. I think, do you have anything fun that you're drinking today, Sarah? Any beverages?
I'm not. I was earlier. I made a soursop smoothie. So soursop is one of these like local, like tropical fruits. But yeah, our friends have this mango, huge mango farm up in the North Shore. And so they also have other, you know, fruits, and they had soursop. So we kind of picked a bunch of them, and they finally got ripe enough where I was able to make a smoothie. And so I know, Kylie, you're like, what is soursop? So soursop.
Thank you for calling that out. Tell me about this fruit. I need to know. What does it look like? What does it feel like? What color is it? What does it taste like?
Okay. I don't know if I can open it. I can't share on here, can I? I probably, it's easier if I just show you through my phone, but yeah. Yes, it's soursop, like the word sour, S-O-U-R-S-O-P. So it looks like this.
What? So it's green?
If you can tell. And on the outside, it looks kind of scaly. And then inside, it's this like white flesh. And then it has these like brown pods, like seeds. So you don't eat the seeds. You peel off the outer layer. And then you just eat the white, like this fibrous, pulpy, you know, white. It's really good. So I don't really know. I don't think we really have anything that compares in flavor.
But I can't wait.
It's like flowers. It's a little bit sour when it's not quite ripe yet. And it has like this sort of, I don't know how to, yeah, it's like floral, fruity. It's really unique. It's so good, though.
I don't know how to compute the words you're saying to me. I don't.
Yeah. It's like, I don't even know how to describe it because the only way to know is if you, yeah. So it's there's like a little bit of sourness, but once it's like fully ripe where it looks like, it kind of looks like it's like bad on the outside, inside it's still super white, fleshy, and it's so sweet. And it's got this like flower flavor and this like fruit, almost like, if you've had things like maybe like lychee or like mangosteen, things like that are very tropical, they have more of like the soil and the tree flavor.
I know what you mean. Yeah. Right? Yeah.
Because it's like, it's nothing like our common apple, banana, whatever. Like, it's not even like a pineapple. It's so different from that. But yeah, it's like one of our favorite things to try all these like different types of fruits here.
They're
but
so different.
The really great thing about soursop is that it has so many health benefits. Like the leaves itself, you make tea out of it. You can just dry it and then you can boil it or grind it up and boil it. But it's like anti-cancerous, anti-septic, anti-like microbial. It's really good for your immune system. So just the quality of anything that's like full of, obviously full of flavor, but if it has like high kind of tangy sourness to it, that's more of the vitamin C component. Mm. And that's really like really great for immune system building, iron absorption. It helps with like, like infections and things like that. So yeah, it's one of our like during the harvest time or like during like spring, summertime, it's like the best because the options of fruits here is just unbelievable.
That's true. Unbelievable. Kylie, I guess you're just going to have to come here to visit us.
Yeah.
I was just going to say, I did not need another reason to add to that list, but if you're going to give it to me, okay.
Because, yeah, like, if you come to Hawaii, too, it's, like, the experience of it of, I mean, yeah, it's so saturated in, like, town and, like, the touristy areas, but you don't realize all of the amazing things that are like this island has to offer, but sadly the way that it's like constantly advertised and and like kind of hoarded, it's like, oh, just come here and have this like luxurious feel, but it's not. It's like all it's doing is trying to pamper you in what you feel like, you know. It's like, it's not, I don't know, I feel like it's not really true and authentic to like what Hawaii has to offer, and especially when it comes to our natural resources and things. We don't need any more of it to be taken, but what we do need is to be acknowledged and like appreciated. And when it comes to like allowing us to grow what should be grown here, allowing us to keep what we grow here so that the community, the people can eat and like have this harvest to share and like to survive on. But instead, so much of it gets shipped out, and then other things from the mainland get shipped in, but then the cost of shipping itself increases our price value. Yeah. So it's like really, it's so twisted, and it's really, really, it goes deep when it comes to like the idea of like being able to appreciate what we have, but then also to know that like it has been kind of beaten out of so many of locals and the native culture that, oh, like the idea that you don't have enough, let me bring you something, let me show you what we have.
Just it's like assuming that kind of mentality.
Know. Yeah.
Or, yeah.
And like we miss out on things like this and things that are actually like beneficial to like human like health and survival of like the ecosystem and the environment, because it was meant to be grown in places like this. And yet we're kind of wiping out what should be grown and then just kind of harvesting, like farming things that are like, you know, what like even the idea of a pineapple.
I was just going to say
the pineapple is like the thing here. It's like, there's like a gazillion other amazing fruits and vegetables and like herbs and spices and like roots and things that like we don't even know half of the like amazing benefits of, right? But yet just a common apple or just a common banana or like the orange, like that's like a year round thing. It's like, it doesn't even compare.
Yeah.
It's like so much better.
I think that's a really cool segue actually into not only, I mean, it dips a little bit into like the value of trying to eat locally wherever you are for sure. But part of one of the major conversations we wanted to have with you today is the value of knowing where your food comes from and how it connects you to your ancestors. And so you talking a lot about the native culture here and the local people here and connecting with their food. I would love for you to just kind of dive in full force about what that whole concept is about.
Yes, I love that. I love talking about this because coming from an immigrant family, you know, wherever you immigrate to, you know that they're probably not going to have the same ingredients, same like herbs, same spices, same even just like the quality of the food. It's just different because the soil is different, the terrain is different, the tools and the practices are different, right? So what do? All we can bring is what we know, like our story, our recipes, our way of interpreting how to utilize these types of fruits, veggies, herbs, whatever you want, meat, fish, right? And so with Hawaii has such a rich culture that if you look at it, even modern day, they've done such an amazing job, like the locals and natives have done their very best, okay, to be able to like preserve and conserve their native language there, even though for generations it has been trying to be like wiped out basically. So then here we are coming in thinking, okay, this is going to be our new home. This is the way that we want to live, but not really realizing like there was like generations of history, knowledge, just like culture that was like deep rooted in their land. And instead of coming in and thinking, okay, I'm going to make this my own, it's no, you come in and you learn from your resources. You learn from the people that already know so much of about this place so that you then know how to be able to contribute, how to be able to support, how to be able to like uplift that, right? Mm-hmm. Especially coming from a generation where my dad immigrated with his family back in the 70s to Hawaii. And they came here for, yes, the same kind of concept, better opportunity. Something to be able to like live off of, right? And at the time, you know, he would tell me stories like there was nothing. It was just like all just like kind of like jungle, forest, farm, just like a whole mixture of like just nothing in terms of like what they thought of like business, industrialized, that kind of stuff. When he tells me this, for me it's like that's like so fascinating to me. That's like amazing. Mm-hmm. That you can come to a place and really be so close to the environment that you can see where your food is growing from. You can see where the animals are, you know, grazing. You can really be a part of that and turn that into what it should have been. What it should have been was to like preserve the resources to like learn how to farm in a way that like wouldn't harm the environment. Learn how to grow certain types of foods and vegetables and things like that without wiping out entire acres of land, right? And so I guess in the kind of idea of like learning that my parents came here in a way to earn money or make a living or like to like expand that kind of mentality, you realize they were just given only that mindset and that option to do that because farming wasn't, you know, it's not going to make you a lot of money, and trying to preserve the land, that's really not the way that people are thinking during that time, right? So I feel like for me it's like so important that we remember where we come from, because it's not to say that, oh yeah, like having access to a computer or having able to do this podcast with you, oh yeah, this is like so anti, no, it's not that. It's the fact that we can come on, utilize these types of resources to uplift us, and then to share the history and the story and the cultures where our families were able to like, you know, teach us about the foods that we were growing and the foods that, and the recipes that we turned into. And I think a lot of what I want to do is to be able to like, yeah, share that part of the story. Mm-hmm. Because it's easy for me to say, oh, but look at how beneficial soursop mm-hmm. is. Because now it's like researched enough where like a scientist said, oh, these are the great benefits chemically, molecularly, all of these things that are beneficial to us. But in reality, like, the natives already knew that, yeah. Right? They didn't need someone to validate and verify what they already knew. Mm-hmm. That's why these things kept growing. That's why they wanted to grow more of these types of fruits and veggies and things like that, right? And even now, like, what I appreciate is that they also know what are invasive animals, invasive plants, and, you know, like invasive fruits and veggies, so that those are the ones they want to encourage you to constantly eat, use up, get rid of, so that it doesn't harm what was actually supposed to be grown in that environment, in that source, right? So, like, I love the fact that they've already known these things. And we are coming in and learning it. We are coming in to like gain more knowledge from them, not the other way around. Not to say, oh, but we do it this way, and we've done it like this, and I come from the mainland, so I would know better. And it's like, no. Yeah, you come from the mainland, which was already like you going to the grocery store and hoping that, okay, if you want a pork chop, it's already cut up for you. It's already there, packaged, perfect. You just got to figure out how much of it you want, right? Whereas, like, if you come here and then you're like, oh, wow, what is this new vegetable? Or what is this, like, seed, like, this pod on the tree? Like, is that even edible? What is that? Like, we have to realize, like, that's where it really came from. You know, that's, like, the natural resources of where it already came from before it got packaged up, manufactured, and put into a store for you to easily go down the aisle and pick, right? So I think our connection with where we, you know, where we're kind of in this ecosystem, right? We're not, we're really like not on the top and everything kind of trickles down underneath us. We're literally in the circle, probably over here,
right?
Right? Next to whatever else is in that ecosystem.
Yeah.
But our mentality puts us in a way that like, oh, we're out here and we're making this ecosystem. And
that is visual. Such a good point.
Right.
I love. Yeah. I also really love the use, something about you saying coming in and using the things that are native or natural or inherent to an area to uplift. So it's that particular word for me, it seems to remove this black and white thinking of like, we have to do only this thing or only my thing.
Yeah.
Instead, it's like, actually, you're missing the point when you say that too. It is this, mm-hmm. It's the connection. It's the connection yeah. of us to the food, us to the land that the food is coming from, us to the people that live there, have lived there. And mm-hmm. I'd even say to the people who are yet to come. Whether mm-hmm. you leave something yeah. or teach something or take something with you to share in a different area. But I really like that visual of the circle and the idea of of us being a part of that is the uplifting. It is this give yeah. and take. Yeah. And it's interesting when you were saying it's not about me coming to you, this new place, and saying, here are all of the things that I do. Do this too. I can't think, and if somebody out there knows of one, please share with us, of one single time in history that's ever happened. It's always about, I know best,
no.
I'm coming in, yeah, I'm taking yep. over, and that we see that with, you know, religion, culture, food, traditions, yes. utensils, you know, what you name it, whatever. But what an interesting mm-hmm. thought to imagine a reality in where you arrive somewhere new, being totally open. You put your ego aside. You feel safe to be vulnerable. I mean, I guess if we're really talking about it, that's where this stuff comes from. It's scary to let go mm-hmm. of the things that keep you feeling safe and to invite something mm-hmm. else in that's unfamiliar. And if yeah. we're gonna go there, which we are, it's one of those, I mean, gosh, what a theme. What a theme. You see this in yeah. yourselves, in the people who are closest to you, the people you work with, your kids, your family, whatever. It's very difficult to do something that is unfamiliar because it does not feel safe. And simply yeah. recognizing that, oh, maybe there is a way to do this unfamiliar thing and feel sort of safe. Maybe it's okay to feel mm-hmm. vulnerable, okay to be afraid, okay to not be safe.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean?
I think that's such a great point, and I love Sarah just bringing up such amazing ways of viewing this. And I also think that the way that I'm seeing this is like, tangible things that people can take away from this conversation and keep using maybe in their homes or whatever it is like, how many times has someone come to you, Kylie, or to you, Dr. Sarah, and been like, I don't know what to eat. Mm. It's like, well, like, why don't, this is a great opportunity to research the land that you live on because it was someone else's before it was yours,
wow.
no matter where you live. So that's kind of a very cool way not only to connect with the food and uplift the culture that was there before you, like you mentioned, Sarah, but also it gives you such an open mind and new things to try and new healthy foods to introduce into your rotation, I guess.
Yeah,
exactly. It just made me think, like, what we just mentioned is that, like, imagine this on a smaller scale. You're in your home mm-hmm. and a guest comes to your home but tells you how they're going to be hosted, mm-hmm. how they're going to make this their home.
Mm-hmm.
And you're supposed to basically let them in, open arms, you know, like they're, I don't know, sitting on your couch or eating your food. They're just, right? Like, you see that. How, like, in, they just sound so bizarre when we put it on that, that scale. But then when we think coming to Hawaii is like, or coming to any place, any country, mm-hmm. any other, like, city or town, it's like, we think, oh, we know best, right? Mm-hmm. And in reality, it's like, we know nothing. We're going because we're curious and we want to learn.
Yeah.
But then when we get there, we think we know everything, mm-hmm. right? So, yeah, same with food. When our patients come to us, there are patients that will do that, will act like they know everything. Mm-hmm. Oh, I already know how to do this. I just need your input. It's like, if you need my input, you can definitely go on Google and mm-hmm. get it for free. Mm-hmm. You know, like, mm-hmm. really. But if you really need help and support and guidance, mm-hmm. I would love to help you
yeah.
with that.
Yeah.
And just like, I wouldn't expect anything from you in terms of like, well, you should know how to do this, 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 and this before you right. come to me. No, it's like, I want to get to know you, mm-hmm. and then I want you to get to know me so that we'll see, hey, in reality, is this a good partnership? In reality, would this be a good friendship, right? Do we have a common ground to even start from? If it is that you know everything and you know so much more than me, then I would tell you like, oh, well, you're already well beyond my level of, you know, expertise. You don't need my help, but let's see if we can find you somebody else who you can learn more from, right?
And can you expand on that a little bit, Sarah? Because one of the things that we also wanted to touch on today is I love your approach and how you talk about inviting the patient in to be a part of their care. And so a lot of those things that you just mentioned about that conversation that happens and exploring if it's a good partnership, I would love for our listeners to understand that I think in the way that we are most familiar with the medical care, at least here in the US, it is very much that I'm going to go to the doctor, they're going to tell me what to do, and I'm going to listen. And I think that's not always the best approach. That's great for someone who wants that approach, who just wants to be told what to do, doesn't really want to think about it, or maybe just prefers that type of care, and that's totally fine. But I'd love for our listeners to hear more about how you really include your patients in their care, and even just to open up their minds that that's even a thing.
Right.
that is even an option.
Yeah, so even just kind of breaking that down in a very technical manner is that I provide all of my prospective patients with a 30-minute consult. Meaning we have a sit down, like Zoom, whatever you want to do in person. Mm-hmm. But we have 30 minutes to basically get to kind of know each other. And the reason why that's important to me, because if I'm going to invest as much as you're going to invest in yourself, I want to make sure that we actually have a relationship that mm-hmm. would be like, you know, productive, yeah. enjoyable. Like we want to be able mm-hmm. to have this partnership. Yeah. So the idea of why even choosing the route that I've chosen to work with patients in a manner of like using functional medicine, a lot more of this, like, I guess what you want to call alternative, because if the norm is not that, mm-hmm. Alternative way of practicing is that I am not here to pull you in my mm-hmm. direction. Mm-hmm. I am not this person with this magic pill, with this magic answer, solution, nothing. What I do provide yes. is guidance, because I've been there, because I relate to you, because I know what it's like to literally on a human level, know what it's like to have pain, have suffering, have symptoms. So that's why it led me to want to learn more about why my body is doing this, why I feel this way, to then know how to be able to like turn it around and share that information so that you can apply it yourself. But I can't do the work for you. So my goal is to always make sure that we're in a partnership. Like whatever you want to call it, like 50-50, yeah, that'd be ideal. But this partnership is that you're just as invested to learn enough about yourself, to know how to apply the things that you're learning so that in reality, you don't need me. Mm. You don't really need people. You just want to have a community. You want to be able to share information. You want to have resources so that the next time you go see your doctor, you go see a therapist, you go see your yoga instructor, it's so that you can learn from them, but also to add it to your own toolbox too. Mm. Right? It's not that you just learn this one piece from them and then you think, okay, well, thanks for that information, and then you just go about your day. No, it's like they're providing you in a very short, condensed version what they have probably been learning and practicing over like 10, 20, 30 years, maybe more, right? But they've learned it in a way, and they've literally lived it in a way that they were able to make it easy to digest, easy to learn, easy to apply, right? And it's not like this textbook mentality, or even with Google, we can find everything on Google, and it's not a bad thing. It's just like, which one applies to you? You don't know that.
Right. Such a good point. Right? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So a lot of like why I work with my patients the way that I do in these different like very intense one-on-ones or group program, whatever it may be, is that I understand that as people, we need community. Okay, we need someone to understand us, to know where we're coming from, to just even acknowledge the fact that, okay, I get you and I see you, right? Because that in itself is enough to like encourage them, give them hope, to be like, okay, good, so at least I'm on the right path, right? I don't really know if this is the right thing for me or if this is going to fix me, quote unquote, but I know maybe this is like in the right direction. And my whole goal is like everything that I try to provide to you is to show you that it's so applicable, that it's not just information. It's not just another piece for you to like, oh, great, cool. Okay. Then you don't know what to do with it. It's like so that you can literally start taking actionable steps and you're doing the action, right? So you're going to be the one making these changes in your life so that you then trust yourself more. You're more aware of yourself. You have more confidence in yourself because you did it. You made these changes. And I think, sadly, in our medical system, just like in school system, work system, any system here, is that it takes power away from the individual. It takes the autonomy. It takes the literally, it wipes us out of like our certainty and our connection and awareness so that we become more prone and more easily, I guess, moldable to the influencer, right? And that's the sad part, is that then when it comes to the day where they have to make a decision on their own, or if they have to make these life changes or anything, it totally kind of puts us in a place where we feel like we don't know what we're doing. This isn't right for us. We need somebody else to like do it for us because we don't trust in ourselves. We don't believe in ourselves.
Oh my God.
When in reality, that was like built that way. It was like to pound it out of you that you shouldn't be confident, that you shouldn't be self-aware, that you shouldn't be certain about yourself. That way you go to somebody else for those things. And even in the work that I do, I just tell them, I only know, sure, I'm the expert in this, but that's because I'm the expert in my world, my me. And I'm just trying to provide you what I know about me, right? And thankfully, fingers crossed, it's helped with so many people, because who would have thought the human body, the way that the cells work, once we understand how the body works, then we can see as experts or practitioners how it doesn't work. Then we can, right, go into our toolbox and say, ah, when that wasn't working for me, what did I do to make it start working again?
I have so many things that I would like to say.
She said so many amazing things just now.
There are so many things that come to mind. First of all, where do I even start? I think the really, for me anyway, it feels like the most important thing that you said here, people who are listening, you know your body best. Period. End of sentence, end of discussion, over. And the reason people like us have jobs is because you have been to a dozen practitioners who have made you feel like a piece of shit, like you're crazy, or you're just depressed or stressed because you're a mom. And right there is the proof of what we're saying. You're not being listened to. You're not being heard. And I don't mean to say that on this like overly generalized scale, I have no problem with doctors. I want to make that clear, right? That's not the message here. The point, though, remains, the truth remains, that this is something that happens. Almost every single one of the people we have all worked with have come in saying, well, this is my last thing that I'm going to try. You're my last hope. I've been struggling for 10 years. I have been throwing up my food for the last 6 months, and nobody seems to be able to tell me what to do. Well, what? What? Nobody is telling you new information that you can take and learn about your body and help yourself? What? It's crazy. But you're right. This is what we see happen. And I'm just to get back to the point of what I'm saying here is like, that's not normal. It's not okay. I should say it is normal. It is normal, but it's not okay. And somebody needed to hear that today. Like, I'm feeling that right now. Mm-hmm. Somebody needed to hear that. And just know that it actually, there are people who exist. There are a lot of us who care, who want you to be a part of what you're doing with your body. Imagine that, right, you guys? What a concept.
Yeah. So big takeaway so far, what we've worked on is we talked about how using the land that you live on as a resource, not only for deepening your own knowledge of history and things like that, but also uplifting the culture and helping to preserve it that once lived there, and adding variety to your foods list and really using the land as it was intended to be used. That's one. And then the second big piece, I think, so far is you as the patient should be included in your health journey because you know your body best. And truly, I think just to echo your point, Kylie, about a lot of the conversations that we have on this show, they may come across as demonizing certain ways of practicing and things like that. And truly, that is not it. It's just that it's the system, I think, that we are fed up with.
That's really well said.
It's not the people. It's the system, the confines within they're forced to do their job. And that's unfortunate. So... Yeah, so by us as people educating ourselves about other methods that are out there and other ways that we can work toward a healthier version of ourselves, I think that's what's going to help that entire system change, is if more people are wanting that and demanding that and they know about it. So, yeah, so that's all I wanted to say, I think.
Clearly all of us feel the same, and a lot of the listeners, a lot of society in general, they need to go to their doctors and to know that they're going to be seen as people that matter, not just walking symptoms. And that's the problem, is that, as you mentioned, Kylie, it's not normal. These conditions, they're common, but they're not normal.
There it is again, saying.
Yes.
Common but not normal.
Right? Because it's the truth. And even with the medical system, it's not that doctors or like hospitals or whatever are bad. It's the fact that there is a place and time for all of this. So if you're coming in with a broken arm, or like you have a heart attack in the middle, you know, like you're having a heart, and you need trauma care. That's what they're best at. That's where they save lives. But if you come in with a chronic condition of fatigue, that is not their expertise.
Right.
They're just going to be like, okay, well, sleep or go outside and run. To somebody that has chronic fatigue, where they feel like they can't get out of bed, but it's like, well, I am sleeping. I'm sleeping maybe 12 hours a day. How much more can I sleep? But that's the thing. It's not that it's their fault. It's the fact that in their scope of practice, they're not given tools to even know how to address this. And they're only given 5-10 minutes with the patient. So if they can't give you an answer. Most,
that's a lot. Yes. I don't know if I've gotten that much time in a long time.
And that's the thing too, is that we're As patients, we're expecting these grand solutions when they know not even a fraction of your life or the way that you live or who you are.
Right.
So that's why when it comes to even anything that's beyond just trauma care, which is majority of us, we're in chronic, you know, conditions. Mm-hmm. That's why we need more practitioners to focus on that demographic, which is majority compared to the trauma, I mean, the acute care, trauma care. Mm-hmm. It really is, mm-hmm. right? And yet our only kind of marketed solution is to just heavily medicate. And mm-hmm. that's why we find that part not to work, not to be the solution, not to be the right fit.
Right.
It's not that it's wrong to be on medicine. It's the fact that what are you taking it for? And then how long are you taking it for? There's always an expiration date. Why don't we as people have an expiration date on when we should stop or wean off of these medications? Because clearly it's not the solution, but it's just a temporary break and relief. But then we should provide them with the actual like solutions to what's going on. So that then they don't require to have this medication. They require to be able to get sleep, to eat well, to hydrate, to move their body, to get proper movement and sunshine and all those things that are actually fueling and like healing to the body, right? Because you're not deficient in medication, right? It's not the, you know, it's not even the Benadryl for the seasonal allergies. It's literally that you're probably low in zinc, vitamin D, you know, vitamin C, things like that. That's what your body fuels off of.
Yeah.
Right? But we don't talk about those things. That's where we as, like, yes, human advocates, that's our goal. That's our job. We're just trying to teach our patients what they should have already innately been encouraged to learn about themselves.
That's such a great point.
That last piece innately should have been encouraged to learn about yourself. But that opportunity is not available even to us as children.
Yeah.
I shouldn't, again, you know, take it with a grain of salt. Some people, that's not the case. But the other thing that I wanted to mention, And this is going to be a takeaway for people, I think, here, is that you should not expect to get some sort of result from some sort of provider who can't offer that to you. And I think having that sort of perspective really helps to soften the whole situation. Because you said it, a lot of people a lot of healthcare practitioners don't have the chance. It's not even that they don't want to. They don't have the option of sitting down and getting to know you and really thinking and looking, and like, they're not taught about nutrition. So if you think that you have a problem with your food and you go to your doctor and they don't even ask you about it, and then you get pissed about it, one, I understand, but two, they're not going to ask you about it because no matter what you say, there's not really much for them to respond with. You have to go to somebody who knows how to offer you the thing that you're looking for. And maybe part of that process is that you're not quite sure yet. That happens. That's real. Totally okay. But keep this in mind while you're on this journey for yourself, wherever you are in whatever health situation you might be experiencing right now or in the future. And know that, you know, we also are all just people. We cannot be responsible for every piece of everybody's health, right? Like I say all the time to my patients, I pay somebody to do my taxes because I'm not an accountant. It has to get done, but I can't do it well. Like I'm not gonna go to my doctor and ask them to clean my teeth. It's the same thing, but food is so much a part of our health, good and bad.
Yeah.
And sometimes we forget that there's a line. A clear one. And it is drawn by all parties. It's drawn by all parties for all sorts of reasons, but it's there. So just keep that in mind so that you can feel a little more, I don't know, compassion or gentleness towards these sorts of situations, which really do feel prickly, don't they? So frustrating when you go to the person who you have been taught your whole life to depend on. Just to come back to your initial part of this conversation, go back to the person who you have been told you depend on or else. And then, like, some piece of your soul knows, like, what? What? This is not right. This person's not listening to me. Am I stupid? Maybe I am dumb. Maybe I don't feel this way. Maybe I do just need anxiety medication. I mean, we see it. You guys feel it. Hands up, right? Like, this is not a nuanced situation.
Yeah.
It's not at all. And even just the reality that when patients walk through the door, they come from a place where they're hopeless and helpless. Mm-hmm. But yet, in a way that, like, as doctors, as providers, we're supposed to actually provide them hope and encouragement. But then you also realize those doctors too, when you said they don't even have the space, the support, mm-hmm. the community themselves mm-hmm. to be able to be uplifted and, you know, supported. It is hard. It really is so hard. And it kind of brings me to this, like, one scenario that, like, came to my mind right now is, like, a patient that I was working with. That's why I have these consultations, so that we can get these things out on the table. What are your expectations? What do you need? How can I help? So that I know where I can provide my resources and if they fit for what those kind of gaps are, right? And sadly, after all of that, we were going to work together, and she had gone on vacation. There was a lot of things that must have happened to her in terms of her health, and she expected me to be able to do something about that. And it's of course, it's so hard to know, okay, there, yes, I feel for you. Yes, I know you suffered. And in those moments, I also want you to realize there's nothing I could have done to have changed that, right? There's nothing I could have done to make that better.
Yeah.
Right? That's where we have to also realize we're here in a partnership. I'm getting you to realize to trust yourself, and to be, that also means that you have to be accountable for your actions too. Mm-hmm. Right? You can't dump that on the doctor and then expect the doctor to then come with the all healing solution. This is us building this new, whatever, building together. You have the idea. You said, oh, there are some problems. I'm trying to figure out how to get through those problems so that, and those challenges, so I can keep building this.
Yeah.
I am just here to help you build those things. It's not on me if it starts to crumble. It means that we both had to come in and be able to figure out, hey, okay, how do we come over, like, how do we find the solution to that problem now? Not just, well, you weren't there for me, you didn't do this. And at the time, too, I had to question myself. And I really had to think. But I wasn't even physically there. Mm-hmm. But I wasn't even anywhere near you to even know that these things were happening. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. But it is hard because, and it's not that she was in the wrong or I was in, it was just that she's so used to having the doctors give her a solution.
Yeah.
Provide the answer.
Yeah.
Take all of that and then say, see, I told you so, mm-hmm. right? And because our relationship is different, she expected the same kind of, I guess, solution right. or the same way of solving that problem.
Yeah. So, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Sarah. Go ahead.
No, go ahead. That's what I was saying.
I so hear this problem and that level of expectations. And so on the topic of keeping our patients accountable, but also being mm-hmm. able to give them actionable things that they can do. Yes. And I'm bringing us sort of like back around full circle to how we started this conversation, because we really started talking about food and how that connects yes. us to our ancestors. And I know, Sarah, you wanted to kind of talk a little bit about how to incorporate these new foods. And so I'm kind of touching on actionable things that you think people yeah. who are listening can do just in general, because this episode is mostly about food and connecting mm-hmm. to the land. I think it could be about that, but also if you have any other actionable tips that you want to throw in there too, just about navigating the system, I guess. I don't know, whatever you want to throw in, but trying to bring us back.
Even just kind of bringing, of course. And like, I guess for me, it's always, how do I make it as simple and as easy for them to just try something new? Because anytime you try to change anything in someone's life or suggest new, whatever, advice, new changes, they're not going to just wholeheartedly be like, okay, I'm going to do it and go for it. Mm-hmm. It's always this sort of like, I don't know, this sort of grace period where they need constant reminders and encouragement. And then like, then it somehow sinks in and they're like, oh yeah, I guess I can try that. Mm-hmm. So I try to narrow that time and space so that it doesn't take them a month to finally feel confident enough to try something new, right? So when it comes to foods, a lot of what I try to do is create these recipes for patients so it's easy for them to just start. Because it's one thing to say, okay, you need to eat more of this, you need to eat more of this. But when they actually work one-on-one with me, I build out their recipes so that they also know it's not this intimidating thing to try something new, because it's already something you're going to eat regardless, right? Even if you eat out and you say you don't cook at home, well, people say they don't know how to cook or they can't cook. They'll say, I can't cook. I'm not a very good cook. It's because you've never trusted yourself to try.
Ooh, that's right? A big one. Oh boy.
So of course, a primal thing as surviving to eat, to feed yourself, to cook for yourself has again been so far removed from us that we lose confidence in ourselves. And when people say to me, oh, but I can't cook. And I'm like, no, you actually can. Like, if we were to put you in a room with just the cooking supplies and, you know, you were just going to stick there, like, you're going to be trapped in that room for 2 weeks, you're going to have to figure out and survive and figure, you know, how to cook, right? So it's not that you can't cook. It's that you haven't even put it in your daily habits to make that a routine. Right?
Oh,
so instead, it becomes easier to just pick up food, to order out, whatever. So my thing is, hey, if I were to provide you recipes, that in itself removes the stress, the fear of like, what do I eat? Well, it's right there. Right? It has all the recipes and the instructions. So then you don't have to think, okay, how do I make this? Right? All you have to do is look at the grocery list and go and buy those things.
Right.
That's the one thing you just have to think outside of the box. Just go to the store, buy those ingredients. When you come home, follow the recipe. And then once you build this sort of habit, it becomes so comfortable and so familiar that you don't need recipes. You just get, I like these types of flavors and I like this type of food and I like it when it's, I don't know, grilled or I like it when it's steamed or I like it when it's like stewed. Then you'd think, oh yeah, instead of using that vegetable for my stew, I can just add this new vegetable. Or my mom used to make me this type of thing instead of using, because I can't seem to find, I don't know, this pepper or something or this carrot. I'm going to try using purple carrot or something, whatever the store has, right? I just try to make it so that it's actually easy for you to now learn how to feed yourself. Learn how to do something that you were innately always, like, you were built to be able to eat and to your body to be able to absorb, digest it, and then to know what to do with that, right? But we forget that even as babies, we never had the say in what we were going to eat, how much of it, when we were going to eat it, and if we were going to get it again, right? We just know we cried. Somebody was hopefully there to put something in our mouth that made us, soothe us, feed us, make us fulfilled so that we can just build on that. And then when we got older, then we can say, I don't really like this type of food, but I do like this type of food, right? We start learning about those things. But yet, if we were only given, and majority of us literally are probably eating the same five things over and over again, even if it's in the different recipe, probably going to be chicken, it's probably going to be bread, it's probably going to be rice, right? It's probably going to be an apple or a banana, you know, that type of like food. We only see those types of foods, but because majority of two, it's like our markets only keep selling those types of foods.
Yeah.
But once we get a little bit more comfortable, once we get more, I guess, even adventurous, because once you're in a comfort level, then you have like that sort of cushion and the certainty to want to start thinking outside of yourself.
Yeah.
Then you start wondering, oh, but I like these types of cuisines. Well, where do I get these types of spices and herbs or even this type of cut of meat? Because I've never seen that in my store. Mm-hmm. Then you feel comfort enough to like venture out, right? But in the beginning, my goal is to make sure, hey, what foods do you like to eat? Oh, you like burgers, you love pizza, you love, I don't know, ice cream. Okay, well, let's make it in this version that not only is really good, but then it doesn't wreck you. Mm. It doesn't give you that heartburn that you're complaining about. It doesn't give you, right, the headache. It doesn't give you diarrhea. It doesn't give you eczema, whatever it is, right? Mm-hmm. We'll do it in a way that is actually wholesome, but really good for you and also tastes so amazing that you'll realize how like, it may not always be easy, but like, yeah, how doable and how manageable it was, that it wasn't this intimidating thing.
Yeah.
And then from there, you'll get curious and, oh, hey, I kind of like these types of foods, or like, I love, I don't know, Chinese takeout. How do I make those things out? Okay, great. Mm. Well, now let's start venturing into a different market.
Yeah.
Right? Let's start going to the stores and getting these types of ingredients that you can actually start keeping in your pantry. So your pantry doesn't look the same all the time. Right? Yeah. We're just trying to make it easier, because if you were to go and drive your car, no one's going to just put you in a car and say, okay, now just make sure you watch out for people and you stop at the red light. And then when you're going, you know, get on the highway, just make sure you aren't running into cars. Like, no, like, yeah.
I'm a full grown adult and I still can't merge properly. There's no way.
Okay. But that's the thing. We learn those things and you practice it. And it's no different. Cooking and feeding yourself is a practice, right? It's what I like to term a traditional practice that has been passed down from generations. Yeah. We have to remember that. We have to acknowledge that. And the great thing is we have convenience now. We have certain types of cooking tools. We have appliances. We have all these amazing condiments and things to make it easier on us. But then again, let's just make sure that those types of ingredients and the types of tools are also very beneficial for our body, meaning the way that you cook it enhances the nutrients, enhances absorption, enhances flavors and things like that.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh my gosh.
I'm going to add one quick thing, because so much of what cooking is the story that people are told. I had a woman say to me, she was a woman of like, she had two or three children, and she got on the phone with me and the very first thing she said was, I'm not cooking, I cannot cook. And I said to her, I know that you don't know me, but I promise you that that is not true. You have birthed two children, and you're telling me you can't make yourself food? I don't believe you. Like, I'm telling you, you're wrong. Somebody has told you this at some point. And I asked her, I said, who told you that? Because that's not actually a natural thing. We are born knowing how intuitively, on some level, to take care of ourselves. You know, there might be various levels of how well we do on any given day, but hey, you know, it's not, somebody told you that and they were wrong. Mm. It's the same way that kids are told, you're an athlete, you are not. Mm. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh, but I actually am pretty athletic. I just was told I wasn't, you know? And so for all of you who are listening, who are like, huh, that's me, I'm calling you out. You can cook. It doesn't have to be some gourmet thing. It's not an excuse. I'm taking that excuse away from you, and now you have to do something with it. And I'm doing it with like love, but I'm definitely kind of pushing you. Like, I'm pushing you with a hug. And I think there's nothing wrong with that, because there does come a time where people's bullshit has to be called. You do know how. You can. Now, there are other circumstances where, like, perhaps you don't have access to things, and that's a completely, completely different story. But this idea that you can't, off the table. It's off the table.
Yep. I think we've talked about a lot of amazing things on this, in this hour that you've spent with us. So to sum up, I think what my takeaways are, and correct me if I'm wrong, Sarah, or let me know if I left anything out, but I think the basis of it is, first and foremost, let's try and challenge ourselves to try something new. And even if that just means putting together a sandwich of sorts, like that is considered cooking, right? Yes. And if you usually just like, I think like procuring food might be a better way to think about it.
Yeah.
Like preparing food, maybe not like, I think people with the word cooking, it maybe seems intimidating to some, but anyway, so prepare food for yourself. And you can start doing that by just thinking about the things that you like. What would you buy of someone else that someone else made for you? Or what are some things that someone else made for you? Maybe it's family or friends that you love their dish or whatever it might be. And you can start there and see how you can make that yourself. Or if you have a recipe that you like or want to try, even try, I'm thinking about what you said, Sarah, about trying variety and maybe taking some local food items, picking one thing from a recipe and just changing it with something else could just be a great way to start, is what I'm hearing.
Yeah.
So we talked about that. We talked about you as the patient having a place in participating in your healthcare. That was a big theme too. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think, did I sum everything up? What did I miss?
Yeah, no, that was everything. I think a lot of us just have to remember and remind others that you are whole people. We are whole people. And when there's something that we need help and support and some sort of like direction and an answer to our question, we should all come together as a collective to like help each other figure that out. Not just, I know better than you, let me just tell you what it should be and what it isn't.
Yeah.
And then again, when it comes to the awareness and the empowerment, also that means you take the accountability that, this is for me.
Yeah.
Like your health should matter more to you than it does to anybody else. Because if it doesn't, then what is the point? That's why you're always going to be in this circle, because you're going to expect everybody else to care more than you. And that just doesn't get you anywhere.
Mm. And they're not going to.
They're
like,
not.
I can't care more about you than I care about myself, or else I can't show up for you.
Yeah.
Ooh, 100%. Yeah. Oh my gosh. Well, I think this is such an amazing, and not bad for a part four, whatever this is.
Oh my God.
Thank you, Sarah.
No, this is great.
Thank you so much for hanging in there with us and sticking it out through all our tech issues.
My God, this was so much fun. No, it was a good glitch because it was like, it was such a great time.
Good.
I really appreciate it.
Well, I think we'll probably be bothering you again to come back for a part seven, maybe. Part five, six, seven.
Like a series coming up. Yeah.
Yeah. So for our listeners, where can people find you? If they're looking for someone who does the type of work that you do, how can they reach out to you? Where can they find you?
They can find me on Instagram at Dr. Sarah Chung. They can schedule on my website, drsarahchung.com. Those are like the easiest ways to reach out to me. You just schedule a free gut check consult. That's a 30-minute free consult where we just sit down and we basically get to know each other. We go over what your concerns are, where I would be able to help you, and then from there we'll see if we're a good fit.
That's awesome. And you spell your name Sarah with no H, just for clarification.
No H, you're right. So Dr. Sarah Chung.
Yeah, H, just for all our Sarahs with H's out there. You're not in their club, you're in your own. It's in the no H club.
Yeah.
So.
No confusion,
All right, well, thank you so much. We're so happy to have you back, and we'll be knocking on your door again,
Sarah. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
Bye-bye.
I really appreciated this.
Bye.
Bye.
Hey, all, thank you so much for listening and being here with us. It really means the world to us. And we want to let you know that we really love to hear from you, and we want to know what you're more and more curious about. So if you are having a particular experience and you'd love for us to track down an expert to try to teach everybody more about that, let us know. Or on the other hand, if you have had an amazing experience with a practitioner who you think would be really great for our show, let us know. We would love to try to bring them on and spread the good news. Thank you so much. Let us know. We're happy to hear from you.